Thank you for joining us for another lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ at Providence is located at 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Anytime you're in the Huntsville area, we hope you'll stop in and be part of our worship. Sunday morning worship is at 9 o'clock, with Bible class immediately following. Sunday evening worship is at 5. Midweek Bible study is held Wednesdays at 7.
Good evening, everybody. It's 7 o'clock. It's time for us to begin. And so what we're going to do tonight is Dave's going to come up here in just a moment, and then he's going to speak, and then there'll be a couple of bells, and then the children will come in the auditorium, and then he'll extend the invitation. But Dave Miller is no stranger to the West Huntsville family. He's been here numerous times, and we really enjoy listening to him. He has a PhD in communications, but more than that, he is a wonderful student of God's holy word, and you'll discover that if you've not heard him before. He is the executive director of Apologetics Press, and he's been in that role for more than 13 years now. He's written numerous books and writes a lot of articles. He speaks all over the country. He's always speaking someplace. And we just appreciate him and the significant contributions he's made to the Lord's church in the U.S. and abroad. So at this time, Brother Dave Miller.
I'm very grateful for another opportunity to come and be with this group of people, as I always am. Love and appreciate y'all very much. You're doing James this summer, or this fall. This is a fall series, isn't it? But you know, actually, summer's not over till September 20th or something. So here are the passages that have been assigned to me. And the connection between these two, though the first section's in the first chapter and the second section's in the last chapter, is it has to do with our money, how we use our money. And let me cut through these passages very quickly as I understand them. In the first chapter, we have this section where he contrasts the poor man, he doesn't use that term, the lowly man and the rich man. And notice that he says that a poor person needs to glory really in the fact that no matter what condition you're in monetarily and physically in this world, if you're a Christian, you're rich. You're rich. And you know that. You know that no matter what we face in life, no matter how difficult it gets, no matter how many hardships we face, and financial pressures, we must never lose sight of the fact that we are rich. And that really does cause everything else to be put into perspective. On the other hand, the rich man must glory in his humiliation, realizing that anything that he may have accomplished financially, any of his acquisitions, his accumulations, are temporary, they won't last, they'll fade very quickly, maybe much sooner than any of us could possibly anticipate. And therefore, he too ought to glory in the same thing that the poor man glories in, and that is spiritual things. Moving over to chapter 5, which if you look very closely, the verses immediately preceding chapter 5, you know, this is one of the problems with, or one of the drawbacks, I will say, with our translations. By busting it up into verses and chapters. Sometimes the fellows that did that, that's not in any of the original text, the fellows that did that sometimes did it at places where we might think, okay, that thought's coming to a close, now we move to this chapter, as if it's a whole nother thing. And many times that's not the case. If you back up the four verses preceding chapter 5, he's talking about business people and business interactions, and how you conduct your business, and how you treat other people when you conduct your business. And then moving into chapter 5, we have, again, these admonitions to people that are in better condition in terms of this world's goods. And notice that when a person becomes consumed with their wealth and their material possessions, they wallow in that wealth, they live in luxury and indulgence. And he refers specifically to the fact that in business it's easy for the employer to take advantage of the employees, by not treating them as well as they should in terms of pay, for example. God wants all of his people like us to be generous. In every aspect of our life, we ought to be known for our generosity. And in business, that's certainly the case. It may not seem to be on the surface the most savvy way to conduct business. Let me give you an example. Chick-fil-A, based on old values, they give out a lot of free stuff. Have you noticed that? If you go there, they give out a lot of free stuff. You can buy that little card and calendar and you get free stuff throughout the year, and just all the way through their business, they give out stuff. It must cost them a lot of money. But that cultivates in customers a sense that this group is generous, they're not nitpicky, and they're not trying to scrimp everything. So those are Christian values, really. You know, the Old Testament, by the way, mentions this withholding wages from workers. In fact, under the law of Moses, you were to pay your employees every night, because the poor needed that money every day. They couldn't wait a month or 2 weeks. And then there's the allusion to an outright oppression of the just, the text says. Again, not using the poor, the term poor, but I think that's who's being referred to. The wealthy, the people that are prestigious in business and politics typically can control the courts too, the legal system, and consequently they can harm the people that they are exploiting by keeping them under the control of the system. So there's a quick summary of what I think is going on in these passages contextually. But let me suggest to you that all the many passages on this subject which the Bible gives us, and the New Testament gives us a lot, I sometimes think Jesus spoke more about the use of our money than any other topic. I mean, it's all over the place when you think about it. You know, the rich man and Lazarus in Luke 16, back in Luke 10, I think, we have the poor man that says, I'll tear down my barns and build bigger barns. Just a whole lot about that. And you would expect it to be, because every day we deal with that, what we possess and what we acquire and accumulate. And God is very, very concerned about how we use that. And so there's a lot about it. But here's the thing that I've noticed, being in churches of Christ my whole life, essentially. We don't really think that we are the ones being addressed in all those passages about rich people. We just don't think that's really talking about us. You know, we're, what, middle or upper class Americans. But is it not the case you have to go back and define your terms? Make sure you're understanding how the Bible is using a term. So much misconception comes from failing to do that. If we don't define a term the way God defines it, then we're going to walk away from the study of a text having basically completely misunderstood it. Now, how does the religious world define the term baptism? You have to define that in a discussion with somebody, or you're going to be talking about two different things. Think of how the Mormon boys use the term elder, have it written on their little name plaque. And yet obviously not the same definition that the Bible gives. And certainly the term pastor is common throughout Christendom to refer to a preacher when it's used in the New Testament to refer to an elder. Have you ever gone to your Bible and looked at how the Bible defines poor and rich? I've been doing a series when I'm in town in Montgomery at Panama Street on Sunday nights called God and Government. And this study's gone on, I guess, for a couple of years, and it's given me an opportunity to sit down and study many different things, because probably everyone in here is concerned about our government, especially the federal government. So we've looked at what does the Bible say is the purpose of human government? And then I compared that with the men that orchestrated our country and found out it was the same view, same view. What is the meaning of the term unalienable rights, which is in our Declaration of Independence? I went back and found what they said that meant and listed several of them, went to my Bible. There's passages on every single one of them. And then we looked at taxation. We looked at, you know, capital punishment. We looked, spent a lot of time on the welfare, entitlement, treatment of the poor, which occupies a big percentage of our tax money to the federal government, does it not? Big, big clump of that. And I was shocked. I was shocked at what I found. So this is some of that research. How does the Bible define poor? By the way, the government defines, in our own country, the government defines poor based on annual income. They correlate that essentially with what they understand is necessary for you to have a basic living. And then they define poor as a specific annual amount of money. It's up to about $40,000 now, roughly. Depending, there's some factors involved, but if you fall below that, according to the government, you're poor. And it changes constantly, you see. The Bible is just so incredible. Does not give any such definition. And it uses the word poor a lot. And certainly Christians are to be concerned about the poor. Here's what I found. When you really think about it, the only things that you and I really need. Now, you know, there's a lot of things God provides for us that we don't have to do anything to get. Like oxygen. You know, He created our bodies where we cannot function without oxygen. So, He created an environment in which we have that. Don't have to do anything to get it, pay for it. But the basic necessities of life that we need to survive every day that require us to do something to get, that would be food, clothes, and shelter. And shelter is really rather loosely defined because, you know, you could live under an overpass or in a cardboard box and survive pretty well. Depends on the weather. Many people in human history have lived outdoors or in caves. You could have a comfortable existence in a cave. And in that sense would not necessarily be considered poor. Well, do you remember back in 1 Timothy when Paul told Christians, look, if you have food and clothes, you need to be content. Well, what are you saying, Paul? Are you saying we all need to be content to be poor if that's all we got? I don't think he's saying that at all. I think he's saying you would not be poor if you have food and clothes, and you ought to be content with that. Now you think of the passages that teach that very thing. That say ultimately that's really what we need. Adequate food and adequate clothes and to a lesser extent adequate shelter. If that's the case, then the Bible defines poor as not having adequate clothes and adequate food. And perhaps even living with no roof over your head. That is biblical poverty that we see described in the Old and the New Testament. Let me try to prove this to you. We tend, being Americans, the most prosperous nation in human history, for a higher percentage of our citizenry than any other civilization in human history. We are so unbelievably blessed that when we look around at the rest of the world, I think we feel kind of guilty. Almost to the point where we feel like we need to bring them up to our standard of living. You know, in doing mission work, you're tempted to, when you go into a setting and you see people that don't have everything that you have, you know, they have a dirt floor. It's packed nicely and swept well, but they shouldn't have to have a dirt floor. Let's give them something better. And by the way, dirt floors were common in our farmhouses in America back in the 30s. By people who said, how many of you remember your grandparents saying this? We were not poor. They didn't mean, you know, if we were poor, we didn't know it. They meant we were not poor. We lived on the farm. We grew our own food. Had a roof over our heads. And none of the amenities we have today. But I believe our grandparents were saying we were not poor. And they would have been offended if you would have suggested that they were, and the government would tell them they were today. Let me show you a few passages. Here's Ezekiel 18, for example, where you have these Old Testament descriptions of when people mistreat other people. If you mistreat the poor, what are you doing? You are depriving them of bread and clothing, food and clothing. That's Ezekiel 18. Look at Proverbs 25, verse 21, quoted by Paul in Romans. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. So food and drink, these are the things that the Bible consistently spotlights. What about Proverbs 30? Give me neither poverty nor riches. Well, what are you talking about? Well, if you're not going to give me poverty, that means you're going to feed me with the food allotted to me. I'm going to have enough to eat. What about Job 22, where Eliphaz is giving reasons why he's confident Job has sinned against God, and that's why he's suffering all of this horrible, excruciating pain? It's because you have deprived people of their clothing and of their drink and of their food. That's all. Nothing else is mentioned. Over in Job 31, Job responds to that by coming back and saying, wait a minute, wait a minute. That is a misrepresentation of my life. You cannot show me anyone who has not eaten my food. Show me somebody that lacks clothing, that has not been warmed with the fleece of one of my sheep. No, I'm feeding and clothing people. What people? The poor. That's the term that's used throughout the verse. Isaiah 58, sharing bread with the hungry, providing housing for those who are cast out. Again, we're talking about the poor. Or depriving them of sufficient covering for their body. Deuteronomy chapter 10, God administers justice for the... By the way, I'm moving into a section in this series of sermons on illegal immigration. The Old Testament has a whole bunch to say about the stranger, too, that we need in this national discussion, and it's not there except occasional quote, which is a misrepresentation of the passage and the teaching from the law of Moses on this. But notice, God gives to these individuals, these vulnerable elements in society, food and clothes. Food and clothes. Let's see. You think that included a cell phone? James chapter 2, here's the context that we're studying. You know that powerful passage in chapter 2 about us having works coupled with our faith. Faith alone's not enough, it must act. That's biblical faith. Leading up to salvation and then including living a Christian life. But see, if you see somebody, by the way, notice the term naked. You know, we see that term in English today, we think nude. So far as I know, it's never used that way in the Bible. It's a person who's inadequately dressed. So what should we be doing to help these individuals? Provide them with food and clothes. Notice then the term naked and the term warmed is an allusion to clothes, and the terms food and filled are references to food. Here is what you need in order to treat the needy properly. Give them these very basic necessities of life. Matthew chapter 6, what is your life? And you know, here's this powerful passage that says, look, if God's providing you with adequate food and adequate clothing, then you ought to be content. He can't mean be content to be poor. He has to mean, what else do you actually need in life? You know, see, again, we Americans, we've piled up a bunch of stuff that we think we just got to have. We may well be on the brink of impending economic catastrophe, and we're going to find out just how much we really don't need, that we are so convinced we do. So in Matthew 6, 32 and 33, when he says all these things, God knows you need all these things. All what things? Well, a car, really two. Nowadays we need two per family at least, maybe three. And we need this and we, no. God knows that what you need is food and clothes. And therefore, you ought to be content. God will see to it. If you're a faithful Christian, he'll see that you have all of this. Now, there is, in a nutshell, Bible teaching on poverty, really. And yet we think, man, people need all this stuff in order to function. No. Poverty in the Bible is defined very simply as lacking food, clothes, and adequate shelter. Well, then, who are the poor of this world? Again, our government tells us we've got a lot. We've got a lot of people in this country. I think the latest statistics show at least, 50 million that are receiving government handouts, all of whom would be defined as below the poverty level. That is such a warped understanding of God, humanity, and history. And history is in short supply in our country right now anyways. We're making all the mistakes that history bears out and the Bible bears out. We should not be making. Let me just briefly show you, really, the poor of this world. You're familiar with it, and anybody that does mission work is really familiar with it, depending upon where they go. Charles Dickens wrote in the 1800s, 1850 and thereafter, and he did a lot of depicting of this kind of poverty in England and beyond. If you've never seen the musical Oliver, you ought to get that and watch it. Please, sir, may I have some more? Look how these kids were dressed in this movie. Actually, not bad, but dirty. Look how dirty they are. Probably rarely took baths, was not provided for them. Prince and the Pauper. Now look at those clothes there. He's got clothes on, but they're rags. Here's some children in Uganda. By the way, do you see this in America? You know, maybe somewhere up in the Appalachians, way back in the middle of nowhere, but it's only because they haven't come down to the government facility. It's not like by choice per se. These are children, I think, refugees from World War II. This takes us back into the American Depression. You know, our GIs ran into a lot in various wars. Great Depression in 1930s. We had an opportunity in America to kind of experience some of this. And it was largely due to the calamity of, the Midwest, Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, parts of Texas and so forth, this dust bowl where the land basically blew to California, I guess. And there's a lot of pictures that have been preserved of those that made the trek to the West on Route 66. The Grapes of Wrath would be the movie that's kind of captured the flavor of what was going on at that time. And so you see people living in shanties, and the children without shoes, although, again, depending upon the climate and so forth, I don't know that if you lack shoes, you're automatically poor. Why would we just assume that if they're not needed? Pacific Islands and so forth. But notice the ragged nature of the clothing, and yet they still have shoes. Notice she has two different kinds of shoes on. Children are barefoot. They all seem very dirty. And even these may not do justice to all of the details that need to be examined. Notice these children, they have shoes on. They're living in a wooden structure with no insulation, although there really wasn't insulation in houses at that time. They seem to be eating well. This child is, again, in very ragged clothes. We would consider this all, you know, pretty poor. And notice this sign, you know, the men, men, if you don't have a job, don't stop here because we've already got our fill of people. See, there was the problem in the Depression. It was a lack of jobs. Notice all these men in the big city standing in line. They need a job. But look how they're all dressed. They're all dressed well. But there was that lack of jobs which would have hastened their demise. Here's one of these shanty towns that would grow up on the outskirts of the main urban areas of America back at that time. You know, that's pretty much been the extent of our poverty so far as I can tell. But look at what's going on outside the United States. And you could go on and on examining this. Look at this makeshift roof. Parts of other roofs that they've just kind of slapped on it. No place, I guess, no system that is put into place to take care of your waste and trash. We take all that for granted in this wealthy country. We've got systems by which that's all taken care of, but in most third world countries, there's disease and a host of other things. These are unpleasant images. I apologize if this is offensive to you, but this is apparently not that uncommon in the world. Here's a fellow with his wife and child on one of these cow-type creatures, and he's having to dig down in the sand in order to get water to fill his water jugs. Is that how you want to get your water every day? Children scrounging through a trash pile. Children lacking food. Very inadequate food. And then, of course, extreme results of poverty. Heartbreaking. When have you seen a child like this in this country? Now, again, if they're there, I don't mean to say they're not. But I've looked into this quite a bit, and they would be few and far between. And so what I'm suggesting to you is, we really don't have poor in this country by world definition and Bible definition. Let me prove that to you. Just go around the country and take pictures of our homeless and those that are designated as poor. Look, for example, in the upper left-hand corner. Nice shoes, better than anything I have. Nice bed clothing or bedding. Look at that coat. Ah, but look what's coming out of his mouth. Cigarette. Got money for that? Unless that was given to him. Nicely dressed, warm in a winter. Look at those shoes. Those are nice shoes. Here's a young family, at least a woman and two children. Look at the children closely. Well-fed, groomed, clothed. The mother's well-dressed. That's an expensive stroller. Homeless, please help. God bless you. Probably the husband, shiftless, won't work and is around back. And he's put them out there, probably. I don't know. That's a very nice backpack. Very nice coat, pants, and shoes. So the clothing's there. We don't know about the food condition, although notice none of these people look like their ribs are sticking out or anything. So they're getting food and clothes. They say they lack shelter. But, of course, there are many ways to be sheltered in our society now, many places where you can be sheltered. wearing nice clothes, nice warm bedding, groomed hair, well-fed physique, sitting around collecting handouts. Some of the street people are those who have been turned out of insane asylums and mental institutions. Do you remember when that happened? Therefore, they don't have access to proper medicine. But as I said, we really have a warped understanding of what poverty is. Do you realize that for most of human history, almost all of it, the poor had nothing like what we have, and neither did the rich. Do you know how many of the people that the government classifies as poor in this country have a refrigerator? It's over 90%. Listen, the richest men in history, King Solomon, never had a refrigerator to keep his drinks cold. He may have had more money than you have, but he didn't come close to having what you have. Didn't matter how much money he had. You could literally have a large classroom filled with gold, trillions of dollars. But if nobody's invented a refrigerator, you're not going to get one. The vast majority of the poor of the world have no refrigerator, no TV, no stove or oven, no air conditioning, no phone, no washer, nor a host of other amenities that we think are necessities, that if you don't have these things, you're poor. Listen, most Americans prior to 1950 didn't have any of those things either. They didn't. We are in such a little slice of history where we, if we don't step back and look at the bigger picture, we're going to be so deluded. And it's going to affect the way we ourselves conduct ourselves as Christians. The truth is, most Americans live better than the richest men of history. Isn't that incredible? Think of all the kings. You know, Henry VIII. And there have been a lot of kings in history that were filthy rich. I mean filthy rich. History records all the things they did with their gems and their jewels and their gold and their silver. But you and I wake up every morning in a physical environment that surpasses all the kings and queens of human history. That's astounding. And that speaks volumes about this country that God has obviously blessed, apparently far beyond any other nation in human history. What's that about? Well, most people can't put an answer to that question in our country. So notice then, biblically, when you look over, pour over the passages in Old and New Testament, the poor is very narrowly defined. They lack food, clothes, and shelter. So the rest of us fit into one or two categories. If we're not poor, that means we have food, clothes, and shelter. Well, then how do you compare that with the rich? Well, they have a lot more than that. You see the logic of that? All right, then according to the Bible and according to the world standards, where is everyone sitting in this room tonight? We're rich. Now, we need to face that because otherwise we deflect all of those passages that we read about these mean, oppressive, rich people. We just deflect all those. That really doesn't apply to me anyways. Because there's a lot of people richer than me. We can't do that. If you and I have more than adequate food, clothes, and shelter, then we're rich. And I'm telling you, the shelters that everyone in this room, I can say this without hesitation, everyone in this room, I don't care what your financial condition, you live in a shelter that surpasses all of human history. Have you ever looked at those castles in England and Europe. Oh, if you lived in a castle, you had to be rich. Man, they're cold, stone cold, drafty. They didn't have all the stuff that we had. Oh, they'd put some tapestries on the wall to try to fix some things up. They didn't live in a climate-controlled house like you and I, where the weather virtually has no effect on our lives. I don't care how cold it gets in North Alabama in the winter, how hot it gets in the summer. Doesn't affect you. Oh, if you have to go out in it. Yeah, you got to walk 10 feet to get in your air-conditioned automobile. And then that's all climate controlled. And then you have to go from there into the office. That's another 15 or 20 feet. And grumble if we have to park too far away and walk too long in it. Shame on us. We're rich. You and I are richer than 95% of the billions and billions and billions of people that have lived throughout time. Incredible that God has allowed us to do that. It's easy for us to think, but I know a lot of people that have more than I have and have a lot of things that I wish I had. Well, besides that being covetous and greedy, we need to dispense with that kind of thinking. According to the world standards in the Bible, we are all rich. So, all of these admonitions in James, chapter 1 and chapter 5, and throughout the New Testament, apply to everyone in here. Children included. Children included. We are the ones who must make certain that we are thinking of others in need. Not the rich people. Us. We need to be thinking in terms. You know, I've talked with individuals that I've worked with over the years that always seem to be in need. Can you buy me a hamburger? I had a fellow walk up to me. I was pumping gas on the way to AP. This is just 2-3 weeks ago. He walked up to me and he said, you know, can you give me some money for breakfast? And I've made it a policy for some time, don't ever give out money. You have no idea what's going to happen to it. And he was dressed nice, had nice shoes, everything. Didn't look poor. And I, usually what I say to them, I'll go buy you something to eat. And he had started to walk around. He said, oh, you will? And so we went over to Crystal's and I bought him the full breakfast and said, now talk to me about your life. What's going on that, you know, you're having to beg people? I just come out and say that. You're having to beg people. Remember what, was it David? No, it was the rich man or the steward of the rich man. He said, you know, I've got to make some preparations here because I'm being fired. So what am I going to do? Well, I'm too ashamed to beg. Now that used to be the case with people in this civilization. That's no longer the case. And so he said, oh, I'm on my way to work. He had a job. And I didn't have the presence of mind at that moment to say, well, let's meet here again tomorrow and you buy me breakfast. You know, we'll just come here regularly and we'll rotate every morning. What was he doing coming up to me and asking me for money and food? And the individuals that are members of the church like that, that your relationship with them seems to be built upon the idea, what can you do for me? You know what Ben Carson calls an attitude of dependency. Instead of what can we all do, it's what can you do for me? Well, Christians mustn't have that attitude. Because all these passages that tell us to be thoughtful to other people and giving to other people and helpful to other people applies to them too, doesn't it? Somehow they once they get it in their minds, I'm not rich, I'm poor, the government tells me I am. Then their whole frame or their whole attitude is, I don't need to give to the Lord on Sunday. I'm poor, everybody knows I don't have money. And then everybody they see are potential individuals that can give them something. I had a sweet young boy who was not raised in the church. His mother's not a member of the church, but he was. And I said, has anybody ever told you you're a moocher? I said, do you know what that means? And he just giggled, said, yeah, I know what that means. But he kept right on mooching. Didn't seem to bother him. And we helped him a lot. Let him live with us for 4 years. And it really didn't help him. It never really raised him up to a different level where he could become independent. That's what God wants us to do according to Paul in Thessalonians. We're to become independent so that we can then help others. Paul said in Ephesians, work so that you will have to give to others. Now that applies to every Christian, does it not? So when we exempt ourselves from these passages, either because we think we're poor or we don't think we're rich, then we are sidestepping all of these admonitions direct from God that we're all going to be held accountable for. We are the ones who must not take advantage of those who may have less. We shouldn't exploit other people just because maybe we're hurting. And may I suggest to you, based upon all these passages that clearly tell the church to be mindful of the poor, once you sort out the fact that we really don't have a lot of that in this country, then what does God expect of us? Don't we need to be doing more to aid the real poor of this world? You know, it's so easy for us to dismiss a third world country because we're not there. Occasionally we'll send a missionary and they'll send word back, hey, we need beans and rice by the tons and we need it now. People are dying. Well, may I suggest to you that fits the biblical portrait in which God commands us to be concerned about the poor of the world. I don't know if you all have done this, and I don't mean to be offensive, but I hear of churches setting up tables in inner city areas and serving, you know, soup on these tables. Now notice that you can go down there, participate in that. Hey, I've helped the poor, I've done my part. And then go back to your nice house and your nice car. And what have you accomplished? Have you enabled people that could actually be doing more for themselves? And by the way, damaging them. Isn't that interesting? You can actually do harm to people's psyche. There's a sign at the Montgomery Zoo that says, do not feed the animals. And it lists several reasons why. Danger of disease and wrong diet and so forth. And you know what the last thing says? It causes our animals to develop the degrading practice of begging. It says that about the animals. You can do psychological damage to people, thinking the whole time, well, look what I'm doing and helping people. There's a lot better things that we can do than just give people a momentary meal and then go back to our side of town and feel good. Haven't helped them a bit. They go right back into the same situation they're in. So what would God have us to do to fulfill these passages in helping such individuals? See, we would do a lot better to take a poor person in this country and say, how much schooling did you do? I dropped out in fourth grade. And by the way, I've heard this over and over. I wouldn't say it. Me and all my buddies, you know, we didn't want to finish school, so we just smoked dope and hung out all day. Okay. We need to get you educated so you can take the GED and at least have a high school diploma. And then you can get a better job, you see, or get a job and go from there. And then look what you can do. See, but that's a lot harder than just handing somebody $5 when they hit you up and beg. That's a lot harder to say, let me get into your life and find out what's going on with your life and why you're in a spiral here. You're unhappy. You're miserable if you think about it. You're not ever going to get any better unless you do something. What do you need to do? You need to take all the steps that you did not take because the home in which you grew up in was non-existent, probably no father. And therefore, you were crippled before you even had a chance. And it wasn't your fault. It wasn't even your fault. Older people made those decisions for you. But now it's your fault if you don't do something to rectify your situation. And we've got Christians here that will meet at the church building and teach you how to read. Did you know we've got people all over the place walking around in their 20s and 30s that can't read? I remember when, you know, 150 years ago, people that adults had the attitude, whatever we do, we've got to teach our children to read. They've got to be able to function in society, and you can't do that if you can't read. When we tell people who come into this country, you can just continue to speak your foreign language and don't worry about English, we're doing them a great disservice. We think we're being loving and sweet and kind. We're not. We're being unkind to them, unloving, non-compassionate, instead of urging them to do what the rest of us had to do. We were privileged to grow up in homes, for example, that taught us to brush our teeth. Many of the poor have rotted teeth with all kinds of pain and suffering going on. Just never really taught that. All the things that you and I take for granted every day, we're all sitting here comfortable, dressed nice. We've crippled several generations of youths. Now, the way to address those individuals is to get into their lives and help them to go back and relay a foundation. And in the process, they're going to see Christianity. And you have a chance then to teach them the truth and maybe save their souls while you're trying to help them with their bodies. That's my time up. Thank you for your kind attention.
We hope you have enjoyed this lesson from God's Word. If you would like to continue your study of New Testament Christianity, please send your name and address to World Bible School, West Huntsville Church of Christ, 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Or if you prefer, send your name and address by email to wbs@westhuntsville.org.